We are in the presence of greatness, of course. The voice of hockey in this country, the play-by-play voice of Hockey Night in Canada, Bob Cole, is in studio, and he has a book. Now I'm Catching On, My Life On and Off the Air by Bob Cole, and he joins us in studio. Mr. Cole, lovely to see you.
Thank you, Robert. Lovely to see you.
I want to know what the motivation is of somebody to write a book, and in general, I think we all have one in us. What was yours? What finally tweaked you to the idea that I should do this?
Talked into it.
Really? Where? Yeah. Publisher?
Yeah. Publisher. Stephen was so good to come along. My kids talking about it. All right, come on, Dad, you always have a story to tell. I don't have any stories that people would be interested in. Who'd want to read a book written by Bob Cole? I have no idea. But they kept pressing, and well, why not? I'll try it, I guess. A year later, you have it in your studio.
What was the process like for you?
Oh, it was tough. It's my second book, of course. First and last.
Yeah.
It was tough. Stephen was great, and as you know, and everybody else knows, that we talked a lot on the phone. He came to St. John's. We did part of a show there, and it was aired on Hockey Night, and the publisher saw that and thought he must have more, so it's probably going to make for a book, and here we are. And we recorded everything. We wore out a few cases of batteries in his tape recorder, driving around St. John's and Salmon River. I thought we'd do a lot more talking on the Salmon River, but I couldn't get him off the river. he's a great fan of salmon fishing, fly fishing, and I'm delighted, and he's good at it.
Now, when the idea was to write a book, did you feel like it was going to be about you and your life before you became a Canadian icon, or did you want it to be about hockey?
You know, I guess the reason they asked me to do a book was that I happened to be doing hockey games for such a long period of time. I don't think it's a long period of time. I'm not done yet. Pass that around, John, if you can.
I'll make the memo there. Yeah. There's no problem, Bob.
But anyway, Robert and Damien, I didn't think I had it in me to write a book. What would I write a book about? And it's amazing how thoughts came back to me when I was 10 years old.
Growing up where?
In St. John's, yep. In Newfoundland.
And what kind of thoughts?
Thoughts were, we were highly into football. A friend of mine from Scotland said that she was watching a CFL game with me one time, the mother of my brother-in-law, and she said the cheek of them calling it football when their hands are all over the ball. I said, you're right. We played football at home. We were a British colony till 49, and then it became soccer. So when I was 10 years old, I got injured. And I really believe now, looking back at the book, that's where I think it started. I would hear the Saturday night game on radio, and I had all the Quaker Oats box tops from my friends who knew I was in bed for a long time. And I sent for all the pictures of the Canadians and the Maple Leafs, 8x10s, by the way. I'd have them on my bed Saturday night with Kennedy, Meeker, and Lynn, Silaps, and on and on and on. And I was in heaven with Foster Hewitt's voice and the crowd at Maple Leaf Gardens. And you'd hear that, come on, Teeter thing coming out. And I was a big fan of the Maple Leafs. It's the only team we got often. And it was fantastic. And our government station at the time, VONF, would rebroadcast that radio game from Saturday night, Wednesday. Mm. And I found myself repeating Foster. I remembered his words Saturday night.
Okay.
And the Hello Canada and a special hello to Canadians from that Hello Canada Hockey Night in Newfoundland. It was kind of me he was talking to.
Mm.
One of the remarkable things, Bob, is that when you consider for the last 45 years, you have been part of our lives in so many ways, and you don't live in a major market. You have spent more times on airplanes going to and from the Rock than most people realize. And why didn't you ever move? Why didn't you come here? And it would have been so much easier on your work schedule to be in Toronto.
This sounds like an airing of an old John Shannon Hockey Night in Canada grievance.
I actually think it became part of the lore. I think it became part of, well, it's a special night because there's a guy from Newfoundland coming to do play-by-play. I think that became part of the magic.
Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah.
It was the Hewitts were associated with Toronto, Danny Gallivan, Montreal, and somebody else. And for a fair number of years, it was me. Loved every second and still working on more. I'm going to go in. See everybody.
You want more games now?
Yeah, I gotta have more games. Yeah. I gotta. Now I'm catching on, Bob. It's tough, but you know what? I enjoyed every moment, and I don't know why you should move. You know, flying is flying. 2 hours.
No, you love flying.
Yeah, sure, but not in the back of the airplane. You're referring to. up front, yes, I do love flying, and aviation is a wonderful situation to be involved in. So that's part of my work, and I, like I said, love every minute of it.
Did you even think about moving to Toronto or nope. even to Montreal? Never even thought about
no,
it?
No, no.
Never occurred to you?
No, it really didn't. Like, they're going to fly me up. The first year, I only did, about 20 games on radio, CBC Radio, Sunday nights.
Right.
And then after the Canada-Russia series in 72, I went to television. And I think I did 10 games the first year or two. And then it became, and then Foster retired, of course, that great man. And then Billy, unfortunately, became ill, and somebody had to move in, and it was me. And so I was fortunate, Bob, and... I'm still trying to get it right, and I'll get it right.
I had the great pleasure of working for Foster and getting to know him. And I spent more than a few hours in his office, even with my feet up on his desk, because he told me it was okay.
Wow.
And then socially, too. But he never, I don't think I asked, but he never offered any advice or tips or anything. We always talked about other things, his business interests and the stock market, which he loved. And I'm wondering, in your time in the presence of Foster Hewitt, did you talk about play-by-play?
Yes, big time.
You did, huh?
You know what happened? May I?
Of course.
No, you can't, Bob. What are you talking about?
Well, I work in the business, and I know time is of the essence.
No, you got
we
all the time you
time.
Want.
Lots. Oh, in fact, we need you to fill a lot of time.
This is radio, Bob.
Okay. Speaking of radio, I began in radio, and the Soviet broadcaster, Ozarov, is held in high esteem in the Soviet Union when he broadcast hockey games in the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came up to Montreal to be there when the team arrived for that 72 series, I said, okay. I'm going to get up and meet them and get the Soviet interpreter and learn all the names and what to do about it. And I think I did okay. And when we got to the Soviet Union, nobody could go near the Soviet dressing room. Army people were at the door, and you just couldn't.
Yeah.
But I could, because I was the Ozarov, I guess, to Bobrov, the coach.
Mm.
And he'd say, no, come. So I came in with all the equipment in the middle of the floor, and I got all the, and so Foster, I got a chance to repay him. He would look for me at the Luzhniki Arena in Moscow because I had all the lines and nobody else did. And I was delighted to do it, because on a trip in 56 to see the Yankees play baseball in New York, I stopped in Toronto on the way home, and I asked to see Foster Hewitt, can I leave this tape I had of a broadcast I had done at home? And the lady said, come in. He said, come in. I don't want to come in. I just want to leave.
Was this on Grenville Street? Do you remember?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Right across from the Westbury Hotel.
Yeah, that's where the studios were.
Okay. So I climbed up the stairway, and Foster wanted me to come in, and I regained the strength in my legs and walked in. And he said, sit down, Bob. And as you know, a tiny man, mm-hmm. and that big chair and the oak desk,
yep. where
you put your feet up, and
yep.
I would dare not do that. And I said, sir, I just wanted to leave this tape, and I wondered if he would listen to it someday and maybe send me a critique, and maybe I should look for another profession or whatever. And he said, why don't we listen to it now, Bob?
Wow.
I had a tough time getting back to my feet again, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Really. I walked down you probably were in that area where they did all the maintenance and stuff. And he mm-hmm. gave it to some guy, Stevie, throw this on. Stevie threw it on, and it sounded awful. And Foster was getting closer and closer. And I said, my God, he's listening to this. Let's go back in the office, Bob. So we went back in the office. And he said, now, I think I like your voice. So that's a great start. I felt like $1 million.
Yeah.
And Bob, then he began talking about what to do broadcasting a hockey game. How to do it. Get yourself some decent levels. Different. Flow with the action. Make it flow. And rise when the crowd rises. And tune it back off. But keep the excitement if you can. And on for nearly 2 hours. My two buddies.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. I was blown away. So I practiced. And somebody said, why don't we give him a job? And I still have the job.
Wow.
You know, speaking of hockey people, Scotty Bowman, one of the reasons people praise him is he was able to be so successful in so many different decades of the sport, win championships in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and all that. The broadcasting has changed a lot since you started. Media has changed. You've gone from starting working in radio to now social media, Twitter. Mm. Are you on Twitter, social
no.
media, nothing? Have you made adjustments to the changing times, or do you think the important thing is that fans want to hear Bob Cole as Bob Cole the same?
I've used it before. John has heard it before. Robert, he did tell me one thing that I remember every
Foster.
Day. Yes.
Yeah.
Every day. Someday I think you'll be up here, Bob. Imagine this is Foster Hewitt blowing me away. And when you do get up here and you do a game in the NHL and you go home and everybody tells you, I saw the game Saturday night and it was a great hockey game, and they don't mention your name, you've got it. Don't you ever forget that. And I haven't.
Well, one of the things that there's two other loves other than his family in his life, and that's the New York Yankees and Broadway. And in many ways, and in talking to people over the years, I've explained to them that what Bob Cole does every Saturday night is a Broadway play. He's an entertainer. And there's a first act, a second act, and a third act. And I do think you view yourself in that manner, is that it becomes a story from the first period to the third period, don't you?
Yeah, I think you're accurate there, John. To start with, I love the game. You know, you gotta love what you're doing, and I love the game. Played the game, half decent, but played it with a passion. Everything I've
you
done.
You play everything with a passion.
Yeah,
huh?
I guess so. But yeah, I've been criticized maybe too much, but I think I understand what the players are going through, and. And I get along great with the players and the coaches, and they treat me very well. And I feel good about doing my job, and I just want the fan to enjoy the game. And when the crowd rises, I probably get up too. As a matter of fact, in the old Quebec rink, there was a light above us and Hull was doing the game with me as an analyst,
mm-hmm.
and Canadians and the Quebec team were going at it in the playoffs, and one goal, I jumped, and I
Your head on the light?
I gave it to that light pretty good, and the blood was dripping. Well, we finished the game. But, yeah, I guess I'm a little passionate. But you got to get that out to the viewer and the listener, you know, and they can enjoy the game. Foster was right. If they can enjoy the game that you're working, you've made it.
It's interesting. I mean, because you, in essence, succeeded. The originator of hockey broadcasting in Foster Hewitt. And I can't say that he and I talked about this because I'm sure we did not. But I'm quite certain, too, that his evolution as a broadcaster, he was not able to listen to others and emulate others and get ideas from others. He had to create them himself. Yeah. Did you emulate him or any others? Did you listen to how other people did it and say, that's a good way to do it? Or did you stay in your own kind of cocoon and say, I'm going to figure this out myself?
Got myself a transoceanic Zenith radio, hooked up the antenna to our garage, which was about 100 feet from my bedroom. And I listened to Chicago, mm-hmm. New York, mm-hmm. Boston, and Foster. And I guess, without even trying, you're imitating.
You're assimilating, yeah.
You know, and I love the way they made me excited listening to a game, and I think I paid attention to what Foster said. Here, try this. Use these levels. Do this. Put them in the right place, and don't get in the way of the hockey game. If a fan, I think, watching a hockey game is attuned to the picture which they're looking at and hearing something else, I don't think that's enjoyable. I think I have to stay with what's happening on the ice to coincide what a viewer is watching. Mm. And my voice hopefully will rise at the right time, back off at the right time. I don't know if I'm doing it, but I hope I am. This is what he said.
And part of what you do is you have to work with somebody else.
Yeah.
Every week. You have worked with
a lot
of people.
Yeah. Numerous.
Any idea how many? Any idea how many
somebody
analysts?
Did it one time. You got to help me here, Robert.
I don't know.
A lot.
A dozen? Lot. Maybe more?
Oh, my goodness. No.
Well, no, more than that. I'm talking about just on hockey night in regular seasons.
It's over 60, 70.
Wow. That's
even more than I would have imagined. I did it one time years ago. Listed them all. You know, I mean,
was there one that jumped out at you?
Boggling.
I know you're not inclined to.
No.
Pick favorites.
No,
on,
not really.
But
no, not really.
But you and Harry had a special bond.
Yeah, because
you
we're Harry. Working together so long. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. This business, but I don't like somebody down there 200 feet away from me, and I got to figure out when he's finished, and he's got to figure out when I'm finished to make a clean broadcast. Mm-hmm. And it's better if I, you know.
Hand on the arm, and
yeah,
then you know.
Exactly, Robert.
And my question was going to be, you've worked with so many people, and that's part of what you do. Is part of what you do try to make it easy for the other person to work with you? Do you think you're easy to work with?
Probably not. I've got idiosyncrasies that people don't like, I guess, but they realize it's the game that's important, and
right.
And I tell a new person. Now, the most important thing for us, you and me, is not you and me. It's the game. The players are the stars. Not you. Not me. And they read that. You can't take it away from the game. Hey, you got a bright new star here in Toronto. You better be on the ball. He's mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid. Wonderful. We've got some great youngsters coming along, and the game is great. And okay, no, it's easy.
Did you, you'll forgive me for not knowing, but I don't think I've ever asked you this question in the few times that we've talked by phone. Did you do, even in your early days, did you play-by-play of other sports?
Yeah.
What else did you do?
I did baseball. I did, this is going to get them. I did the Olympics in 68. I didn't know, I was a fill-in for somebody. And it was a hurried up thing, visa and everything, down to Mexico City.
Yeah.
And you're doing the field events, Bob.
Oh, okay.
What are the What? Field events. And so what, I got it better. Before we really got into the Bob Beamon broad jump and all the other stuff, I did rapid fire pistol shooting, skeet shooting, all of this on radio. Now, you make that exciting.
Wow.
So, yes, I've done other sports.
Hey, listen, you were magnificent in the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles with Vic Lindell doing volleyball. Absolutely. It changed volleyball to another level. Bob Cole calling a spike. Come on.
Yes. Karch Karai.
That's right.
Greatest volleyballer in the world. And here I am in L.A.
How many you have such... You have so many great lines you have used over the years. You know, our friends in Edmonton talk about your line in the 84 Stanley Cup. How many are planned?
None, honestly.
When you sit there on a Saturday night in the Chicago series and you yell, everything is happening.
It is. It's there. It comes back to what Foster Hewitt said, bring that game to the viewer. And it happens. They're going home. The same thing happened in that.
76.
They walked underneath this. The spectrum was close to the ice, and they were leaving. And I'm looking at them leaving. Dick Irvin with me, and Denny Potvin, and I'm looking at these players walking underneath to the dressing room, and I said, "They're going home." And we looked at each other.
It may be the most memorable line by a sports broadcaster in forget the history of this country, in the world. They're going home.
They're going home.
I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going home.
We took it all.
It was pretty simple. But
and it just happened at the moment.
I thought I'd lost my job. We're getting on the airplane after going down the runway. And our exec producer was Ralph Mellenby, and he was behind me. And I said, well, I guess I blew it today, Ralph. Coley, he said, that's the best 3 minutes we've had in 10 years. So you never know, John. I don't plan it. No, I don't. And I got to keep doing it. And I'm catching on, and I'm going to get it right. Yeah.
So that would have been one of the memorable ones.
Yeah.
There have been so many. Any ones... I'm sure you get asked this question all the time. You know, what are the most memorable moments that you've broadcast? Are there a couple you could share with us other than that one? That's a good one.
The Mario started the old baby thing. It just happened. Somebody said to my daughter Megan when she was working with you at the Hockey Night in Canada studio, where did Bob get this? How did he come up with this? He just learned that or what? And Megan said, I beg your pardon. He uses that around the kitchen when we're growing up. So you don't plan, you know. I don't think.
Well, that was
I
the first time you'd used it, though?
Yeah.
With Mario?
Yeah, and was that and Minnesota, the camera had him pumping.
Minnesota-Pittsburgh Stanley Cup
when he
final,
went through.
91.
Yeah.
Well, John Casey was the goalie.
Yeah. And Mario and baby. It was so good. You know what I mean? It was so smooth, so good. Another one was Joe Sakic. And I mentioned this somewhere in the book, I believe. Since this darn thing was done, I thought of other things that, Jesus, I don't think I...
Uh-oh. Are you telling me there's another one?
No.
Uh-oh.
No. But, you know, the Sakic thing, Joe, the first couple of days in practice at Salt Lake, I had a Hockey Night Canada cap on, and he took it off my head and fixed the peak like the young guys do.
Yeah.
Fixed it for me. Yeah, yeah, that's better. And he had a great game. That next game was a great game. He got a goal and an assist, I think, and it was a great game. So every game, Joe Sakic would look for Bob Cole and just touch my cap. Mm-hmm. That's all. And when he got that breakaway, started inside his own blue line.
Gold medal game, right?
Yep. Sunday afternoon, and it's exactly where we were seated in the arena. And he was skating away from me, and it was Joe Sakic. It's a break, and it's Joe Sakic. And then, quiet, and then a Joe Sakic. I was in love with the guy, right? and he scored.
But part of your magic, Bob, has always been your sense of anticipation. The puck's at the left blue line, and the team takes it, and you know that, by the way, if I'm not looking at the television, I better start looking at the television because Bob's voice is starting to raise, and he's going across the blue line.
That's a great
point. And all you have to say, and I've told this to kids who want to do play-by-play, is all you have to say is, watch out! And people go, Bob's telling me I better pay attention for the next 10 seconds.
Something's happening.
Something's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, 98 in Nagano. You know, it's not a memorable Olympic for Canadian hockey. But when you said, they just have to score, that's magic. You know? And the guy at home saying the same thing. That's the magic of it.
And no. My daughter Hillary said to me, Dad, of all the calls, we were all watching the gold medal game. And Shanahan was the fifth shooter.
The semifinal.
For Team Canada, semifinal. And I just happens, you say, well, he picks up the puck and he's got to score. That's all there is to it. He's got to score. No. The whole country, Dad, she said, went no. So, no, it's not scripted.
Magic. No, it's magic.
Well, I love the show. This is a great show you got going here, Robert.
Yeah, it's all right.
Do we have time to talk about his relationship with players?
We got all kinds of. What's your time schedule like? You got time?
Oh, I think I can squeeze another minute or two in.
Can you squeeze in a little bit more than that?
I'll try, yep.
All right, so here's what we'll do. Can you hold that question?
I can do that.
We'll take the break, and we'll come back, and we're going to juggle the lineup, and Mr. Cole's going to stay with us. We'll come back with more. Primetime will continue in a moment on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. Bob Cole is in studio with us. He is...
he's regaling us.
He has a new book. It's called Now I'm Catching On, My Life On and Off the Air, available at a bookstand near you.
I actually saw Bob Cole sing Sinatra on top of a bed in Nagano, Japan, in his hotel room.
Really?
Yeah.
Is there videotape of that?
Were there beverages involved?
I have no comment. All I know is I knocked on the door. The door, door's open. Walked in, and there he is. He's on the bed singing Sinatra.
You believe that?
Well, it doesn't surprise me at all that you'd be a Sinatra fan.
What's wrong with that?
I'm a Sinatra fan.
Oh, good. I knew you. I knew
huge
it.
Sinatra
I knew it.
Fan.
I just knew.
You know, you're as John was saying, you're a big Broadway fan.
I love Broadway. I love getting an opportunity to visit big cities and seeing the professionals work. They're so good.
So do you have a favorite or favorites?
Yeah, favorite
among,
show you
among
see.
The all the Broadway shows?
I talked to Ron McLean into coming to Broadway with me. He was going out with the guys in New York for Italian food. We're going to have a great Italian meal. And I said, no, you're not. I've got two tickets. We're going to see Cole Porter and all his music and Anything Goes at the Lincoln Theater. We went in and we sat there, and there were great seats. Halfway up the first section, orchestra pit, they were warming up. You see the tips of the violin bows and stuff. And we were getting set for the show, and McLean wasn't happy. He knew he's missing a great Italian, you know. And the first character came out, and it starts very slowly. In olden days, a glimpse of stocking eyes looked on something, and he looked at me. What is
really?
This?
Yeah.
But then the music slowly
builds,
comes into play, and it was boom for the rest of the night. He was walking across the lobby to meet the guys in the Grand Hyatt Hotel after singing Anything Goes, McLean. So he's a fan now too.
I don't think can anybody go to live theater and not become a fan of live theater? Oh. I mean, I went for years and didn't pay any attention to live theater at all. And then when I finally went, I went, holy cow, I've been missing something.
Well, live music and live theater.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a musical. I mean, it can be. I've seen all kinds of other things too that have. It's just, it's there. It's real. It's raw. It mistakes can happen. It's a wonderful experience.
But, you know, there's all kinds of theater. And I will tell you that one of the great moments in my career was the theater. And John and I talk about this from time to time that I got to enjoy driving from Anaheim to Los Angeles in the back seat with John Shannon driving and Bob Cole in the front seat and the conversations. And we did it 2 days.
Ottawa-Anaheim series in 2007.
And now that, ladies and gentlemen, is theater. When you get to sit back, shut up, just listen to
arguments?
Bob Cole.
Were we arguing?
Oh, yeah. No, there were a few arguments.
Okay.
Or volleying out a few thoughts here and there.
Perfect.
You had a bunch of thoughts and
lovely drives.
You can see, that's one of those moments if you shut up, you might learn something. So I shut up and I learned stuff.
I will tell you one story. 1999, late in the regular season, I have to phone Bob. And I said, Bob, listen, I'm going to take you off the Saturday night Toronto-Montreal game. You can't do it. What? It's Toronto-Montreal. It's the end of the season. I said, Bob, we're taking you off. Well, why? Because Wayne's last game is tomorrow. And you have to be there for that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. This gets me to the
kind of buried the lead there a little bit.
Well, but that's, I love burying the lead with Bob. That's part of the story with Damien would appreciate. But it gets to me, it gets to the point of relationships with players. Because that very game, that Sunday afternoon at Madison Square Garden, and the time that Wayne made sure he spent with you before the game. Earlier this season, Connor McDavid made sure that he had to meet you. There's something in a relationship that you have with players. And why does it happen? I mean, what do you do that, with all due respect, that the rest of the broadcasters don't do?
I have no idea what other broadcasters do, but I think they know I appreciate what they do. They're the best. We talked about Broadway and watching the professionals work. I mean, you wouldn't trade that for anything if you get the opportunity. And to see our players play the game, in spite of all the changes that have been made in the game, they're still great. And they know darn well that I feel that way, I think. It's nice of you to mention that. Connor McDavid, I was told his first game in Montreal after the injury, he had come back from the injury, shoulder thing, and the PR person for the Oilers said, Connor McDavid has requested a meeting. He wants to meet you. What? Connor McDavid, this young phenom, wants to meet me. Yes, he does. So I said, well, of course. So I went over to the Edmonton dressing room, and they told him, and out he comes with a gown on and put his hand out, and he's 18 years old, and he's a multimillionaire, and he's looks like the best thing I've seen in a long time at his job, and he told me, I was honored to meet you, and I was screwed up for the rest of the day.
I am of an age. I grew up as a kid with a Heathkit radio under my pillow listening to Foster Hewitt do Toronto Maple Leaf games. And then as life evolves and passes along, I start listening to Bob Cole. And you become iconic to couple of generations
now. The sound of the game.
Well, I mean, Connor McDavid, as an 8-year-old kid, was probably sitting in front of his television every Saturday night, and there was Bob Cole. There was the voice of Bob Cole. Now, all of a sudden, he's in the National Hockey League, and the most direct relationship he can have between his youth and growing up and where he was then was you.
Wow.
And I'm sure that's the case. I'll bet you, and you know this to be true, there are dozens, hundreds of other kids that maybe don't have the status or the gall to ask to say hello to you or for an autograph from you. But make no mistake about it, you are their connection to their youth. and them as kids in the game?
Well, it's very humbling to hear a person that's been in the business like you have, so great for so long. But I just do what I like doing. I don't see anything special about it. There are hundreds of broadcasters doing the same thing, and it's great to hear a Connor McDavid. How does he know me?
It's crazy. He watched you like we all did. Yeah, we all grew up with your voice in our heads.
But Bob, I gotta tell you though, both Bobs, is that you travel with Mr. Cole, and you'll find general managers. I mean, Glenn Sather's one of your great friends.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Bruce McGregor, who was in Edmonton for so many years. All these guys, goes back to even when you were doing CBC Radio on, the Saturday night or Sunday night CBC Radio games.
Sunday night.
You built and created relationships with these guys that have lasted for decades. And that's what always has impressed me that's come back, is that these people, not only did you do the play-by-play with them, but they became your friends.
Oh, yeah. I'm proud of that. You do your work, and it's the same for me, and it's the same for them. It's another hockey game, and people like that come by you and just say hello and been listening to you and keep it up. Simple, small stuff, but it's pretty big.
Well, what Bob doesn't tell you though is that he's also one of the really encouraging people in the business. You'll run into him at some arena and he says, "You're sounding good. I read your stuff. It's all good." And you've always been that way to a lot of people, yourself as well. I wanted to ask you, so few people have been able to last in broadcasting as long as you have, almost nobody. One of them is Vin Scully,
who's
just retired
2 weeks ago.
And I wonder if, because you're a baseball fan, Yankees fan.
Yes.
But you might have had any thoughts on
baseball?
On Vin Scully and his departure, and his any. Did you watch it?
Did you admire his work?
Oh, indeed. Damien, Bob, John. Good afternoon, everybody. What a lovely day for baseball. And you're in the mood.
Simple.
And everything he says is relative to the game. He worked in the booth. Alone, nobody, and he made you feel to enjoy the game. That's what Foster said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simple, really, but I suppose it's not that simple. But it beats working for a living. It's a great job, and we're all lucky to be in this kind of situation. But Bob plays golf every now and then. Yeah. I hear he's terrific.
Oh, he's unbelievable. Just ask him. He decided he could have kept going, but he decided not to.
Yeah.
But you have no plans.
Are you talking to John Shannon now or me?
No.
Me? No, I've never thought of it, about it. Somebody else might think about that, but I don't. Because when is the next season and how many games are they going to give me this time? Mm-hmm. I wonder. And I can't wait to get going. Honestly,
I've got a question that I've pondered for a long period of time, and I've asked a few people of your stature over the years about this. And since Vin Scully's name came up, Vinny started in Brooklyn before television. He was all the broadcasters from his era, from our era even, were radio broadcasters, generally speaking, before they did television.
Yeah.
Vinny did a television game much the way he would do a radio game, but there were tangible differences in it because he relied on the visuals. He understood that if you're watching on television, you got to see things that he didn't have to describe. The art of Vin Scully, in my opinion, was his ability to paint the picture for people on radio in the times that I listened to it. It was artistic, nothing short of that. I'm wondering if how conscious you were. When's the last time you did a radio game, by the way?
The last time I did a radio hockey game was when we lost the audio, in Minnesota. And then we got the audio back and the video was gone. And they said, continue on, but they don't see a picture.
Okay.
And I met a friend a little bit later, a month or two later, and said, you know, I was listening to a game, watching a game from Minnesota, and you turned to a radio broadcast. We lost the video, but I could hear you doing radio. I guess that was the last time.
Well, and I ask that because there's a you have to be conscious of the fact that the there is no viewer. They are imagining what you are saying. And you are conscious of that. You understand that there's a fundamental difference in doing a game on radio and on television.
That's why I just explained that short story. I changed automatically, knowing I had to be careful to try to paint the picture.
Mm.
Mario to the left side. Coming in from the wing, picture it. Get the picture in the viewer's listener's head. And Foster did that every game. The Leafs are in the south end of my right, and these things. They're in their white uniforms tonight, trimmed with blue. Now you're there.
Mm.
Little things, but you're there.
It is shockingly, we've run out of time. It was we've done an hour.
All right.
We were planning on doing 20 minutes, and we wound up doing an hour, and we could do 5 hours more, which means, Mr. Cole, the next time you're in Toronto, we want you to come back. Will you do that?
I'd be more than happy to come back. It's been a great hour, has it been?
An hour.
Goodness.
The book is Now I'm Catching On, My Life On and Off the Air. If you are a hockey fan, if you are of a certain age, no matter who the heck you are, this is a book you will want to get. And it comes out just at the right time of year when the book, in the middle of the book season.
Absolutely.
In anticipation for Christmas. It is a perfect gift for anybody who is a hockey fan. And we are all fans of this gentleman, Bob Cole. It's lovely to meet you. Thank you very much for joining us today, and we'll look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you, Robert. Pleasure.